How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
It's the Crossover Sports Illustrated's NBA show. Breaking down the latest news, rumors, and everything in between. Here's your host, Chris Mannix, Rohan Akhmi, and Chris Herring.
This is the Crossover NBA podcast. I'm Chris Mannix, joined, as always, by Chris Herring, SI senior writer, author of the New York Times bestseller, Blood and Guts in the Garden, and a member of South Florida's boomerang generation, Rohan Nadkarni.
I was excited for the intro today, Mannix. I knew you'd have something cooked up and you delivered. So well done.
Are you
well
familiar done with the boomerang generation?
No, actually, I got to say.
So the boomerang generation.
Oh, Rohan, you set yourself up. You should have just said yes.
I want to hear this. I need to hear it.
Oh, man.
So in the spirit of the boomerang, and Herring knows where I'm going with this, the boomerang generation is the generation that moved out of their parents' house and boomeranged back in.
I see. So okay. Well done.
There you are.
Well done.
There you are.
Just welcome say yes to next time. Just like I do when you hit me with Pusha T lyrics that I'm not even sure what they are. Just laugh and keep it rolling, dude.
Oh, man. All right. So, guys, we are now in full off-season mode in mid-June with the finals in the rearview mirror. And we've already had some pretty interesting names enter the mix. And I want to start with Bradley Beal, the Wizards all-star guard. Reports emerged this week that Beal and Washington will work together on finding a trade if the Wizards decide that they are going to do a complete reset. Beal just completed the first year of a five-year, $251 million max extension. He has a full no-trade clause, which means Washington has to work with him on a deal. The market for Bradley Beal, I think, is going to be interesting. He's going to be 30 years old in a couple of weeks. He is still a dynamic scorer, but he's got a history of injuries. He has been the most durable guy, especially the last couple of years. Herring, I'll start with you. What do you think the market is going to look like for Bradley Beal?
I don't think it's going to be great. I think for a lot of what you just said, you imagine that only a handful of teams would be interested from the standpoint of like, how quickly does he put us into contention for something really big? You're only going to be interested from that standpoint. You really only can be interested from that standpoint because he's going to clog up most teams' cap in a way that not just clog, but also you can't move him on a whim. You have to do it the way that Washington's being forced to do it now. I think the injury stuff is the bigger concern. And what's interesting about this to me is that I actually think it might tend to end up looking like his teammate's situation in Dallas a couple years ago with Porzingis, where you're going to have to end up trading him for like bits and parts. And it's probably more of a player return that you're getting back, I would think, than picks, just because I can't really see any team just leveraging their whole situation for him, because he's a very, very, very good player. He has moments where he's a great player, but he's just not durable enough, and he's had pretty good teammates at times. Look, I understand that people aren't going to say Kristaps Porzingis is the greatest thing since, you know, the second coming, but he had a great season last year considering what people expected of him, and I think that the Bradley Beal trade that ends up happening will probably end up looking a lot like what the Porzingis trade out of Dallas looked like when he went to Washington, where it's a couple of pretty good players. No one great, but a couple of pretty good players that make decent money, because I don't think teams are going to be willing to give up really, really big draft picks here. I don't think you can. I think that he's too big of a risk. And I think to some extent, Washington will be viewing it as, a thank you for whoever takes him off their hands, considering that he's going to make that much money for the next few years. So it's a tough call. I mean, he's going to end up somewhere, but I think that it's a pretty small market for who's going to really be gung-ho about trading for him at this point.
Yeah, there are a ton of factors at play here. First and foremost, I think Bradley Beal is going to determine Bradley Beal's trade market, because it's going to come down to who he puts on his quote-unquote list, right? If he has three teams on his list of places that he would actually go to because of his no-trade clause...
Where does that, Rohan, where does that
no-trade clause rank among the worst personnel decisions? Like, it made zero sense at the time. Like, it wasn't like Bradley Beal was going to turn down a $250 million extension because he didn't get a no-trade clause.
It's snuck under the radar. Like, it's like they saw the Lakers make the Russell Westbrook trade, and they were like, quick, let's give Bradley Beal a no-trade clause right now, just to, no one will notice. It's not only does it not make any sense, it's one of the most just... Give me a single reason for why this needed to happen. Like, I can't think of a single reason why they needed to give him a no trade clause. I truly, as you mentioned, he was not turning down that contract. No one has turned down a Supermax contract because of a no trade clause. Just truly baffling. So the Wizards have backed themselves into a corner, because if Bradley Beal says, I'll only play for two teams, Washington's essentially restricted to only negotiating with those two teams. You factor that in with the idea that I think every team around the league is a little spooked right now about the new CBA, the second tax apron, what are the consequences going to be? I don't think a lot of teams, even teams that in a normal circumstance would be eager to add someone like Bradley Beal, I think even other teams now might take a step back and say, can we really afford this contract? How is it going to affect us a year from now, 2 years from now, etc.? I'm with Herring. I wouldn't be surprised if he moved for spare parts, if he were moved for expiring contracts, because why are you, if you're trying to acquire Bradley Beal at this point, why are you offering the Wizards anything? Let's, you know, the rumor's already out there. Like, people have connected with the Miami Heat. I think that was who Shams named in his first report about a potential trade. Let's just take the Heat, for example. Why are you giving up why would you give up Tyler Herro in a Bradley Beal deal at this point? Because if he says, I want to play in Miami, the Wizards, they can't afford to have him on their roster for another 4 years at this salary if they're trying to rebuild. They're really backed into a corner here. I'd be surprised if he were moved for anything other than spare parts.
Well, you've got to give up a big contract to get Bradley Beal, because you can't make the money work without it. Mm-hmm. And if you're Miami,
right,
and all it would cost you is Tyler Herro and a first-round pick, I'd probably do that, because you just made the finals.
Yeah. It may even be less, though.
I don't know what. Yeah. It's not going to be Duncan Robinson and a first round pick. Like, you're going to have to give something of substance back in return. And Tyler Herro, sixth man of the year recently. Like, he's the carrot in all that. But I don't think it would cost more than Tyler Herro, and I'd probably do that if I were Miami. But let's dig into, you know, realistic options here. And I think Miami is a realistic option because of the package that they can put on the table. I don't believe Boston is a realistic option. I refuse. This is going to be, guys, the first offseason. I am putting a moratorium on Jaylen Brown deals this offseason. We have to stop. Every year we do this with Jaylen Brown, where it's Jaylen Brown for Anthony Davis. It's Jaylen Brown for Kevin Durant. We're not doing Jaylen Brown for Bradley Beal. It's mostly because I think it would be insane to do that. Jaylen Brown is going to be 27 years old at the start of next season. He's coming off his first All-NBA season. Yeah, you're going to have to pay him a supermax contract to keep him around. But, you know, in the next 3 or 4 years, there's going to be a lot of guys with that supermax contract. So making $40, $50 million per year is not going to be this albatross around the neck of teams. And if we learned nothing from the Denver Nuggets run, it's that, you know, consistency matters. Going through the fire matters. And yeah, the Celtics underachieved at the end of the season, getting beat by Miami, but trading Jaylen Brown, in part because like Jason Tatum and Bradley Beal grew up together, like is not the solution to your problems if you're the Celtics. So I would take that completely off the table. In fact, I believe that is completely off the table. I don't think Boston's at all interested in doing a deal like that. The team that makes the most sense to me is Golden State, and that's always been the case with Bradley Beal, because they can offer a young centerpiece in Jonathan Kuminga in a deal. Maybe even throw Moses Moody into that mix. They have Andrew Wiggins' contract that could make everything work. They have the draft capital that could make everything work. And look, it sounds like they're trending towards bringing the band back together, you know, having Draymond back, either opting in or on a new deal. Klay Thompson will be back. We'll see if he gets an extension on his deal. Steph Curry obviously is there. You put Bradley Beal as a third option on that Warriors team. How do you stop them? How do you even slow them down? They become not as dynamic as the Kevin Durant Warriors, but just a cut below, and certainly more dynamic offensively than they were last season. They'd miss Andrew Wiggins, because Andrew Wiggins was a Swiss Army knife for them defensively, and we saw what he did during their championship run a year ago. But that's a team, Herring, that I believe makes the most sense for both sides. If you're Washington, you get young pieces, or at least one piece, you get a draft pick. If you're Golden State, you get an all-NBA-level scorer that you can plug into an incredibly dynamic, you know, perimeter offense.
Man, I totally hear you. Totally understood. We've seen how having we've seen how having a third all NBA caliber, all-star caliber wing player just makes them unstoppable offensively. But man, just think about what we've been talking about with Beal and how his unavailability hurts so much, whether it's him getting COVID for like a fourth time or whatever else. And just the injuries, and granted, they've been uncompetitive at times, so sure, he's just sitting out because there's no benefit in having him play after a while when you're trying to essentially lose. But Wiggins, and I understand that like recency will tell you, oh well, he just missed a whole chunk of this last season. I think that on some level was kind of their undoing, that he had to miss that time for personal reasons, but he's been available most of the time throughout his whole career, and so it's not just that he's readily available most of the time, the vast majority of the time, where he's a guy that's played 82 games before, I think more than once. It's also just what he brings, where even if he's not scoring for you, which he normally does, he's rebounding. He becomes their best rebounder sometimes. He becomes a guy that you can throw on LeBron and all these other guys. Beal can do things when he's not scoring. He can play make for you and stuff like that. But I think the availability part of it is just so important. And I think that the other, that when you talk about the Swiss Army knife qualities that Wiggins has, if you had asked me 4 years ago, would I be arguing that no, you can't trade Wiggins because, you know, he's way more valuable than Bradley Beal? I think particularly for that team, I just think he is. I think you're right that the Wizards would do it. I just don't think that the Golden State should or really needs to right now, unless you're looking to move off of somebody. If you're not as interested in having Klay come back or something like that, and you're going to need someone scoring, okay, then I can have that conversation.
Well,
but I don't think
not
I would
to be
do
salary
right
cap
now.
Nerd guy, but I don't think it is possible for the Warriors to acquire Bradley Beal unless they trade both Jordan Poole and Andrew Wiggins. My very basic understanding of, again, this is where the new CBA comes into play, because I'm with Mannix. I think the Warriors, they're a team that over the years, I wouldn't say he's been linked to Bradley Beal, but when we talk about Bradley Beal fake trades, when the Wizards should have traded him like 2 or 3 years ago, the Warriors were a team that came up post-Durant. The problem is they're already over the second apron, which restricts a lot of the moves you can make. You can't take more money back in a trade. That's an important one here, because even if they combine the contracts of Wiggins, Kuminga, and Moody, they're not approaching Bradley Beal's $45 million a year salary. So they'd have to trade, I think, Wiggins and Poole to make it work. Now, that's a much steeper price. I know Poole obviously struggled last year, but he's been a big part of their future plans. And let's say they're even willing to do it. You trade Poole and Wiggins for Beal. You now have Steph, Klay, Beal, and Draymond making huge money next year. Even if DiVincenzo, for example, opts back in on his relatively cheap team contract, you are going to have to knock every minimum signing you make out of the park at that point, because your roster is going to be very top heavy. I'm not saying that that wouldn't still be a fantastic team. I mean, you still have Gary Payton signed, Kevon Looney signed. You'd have the young guys. It would just be a fascinating way to build a team right now. When you saw the Nuggets kind of do, I'm not saying that the Nuggets are now the model, you know, they did it a little differently, depth, two great players, etc. that's what I'm talking about when we talk about how the second apron and the new CBA comes into play, because a team like Golden State is going to be very restricted in what it can do, not just free agency-wise, but trade-wise, because of the tax situation.
Yeah, and I think one other factor is that, again, Bradley Beal will decide where he goes.
Yeah.
And there were reports a couple of years ago when Golden State was in the mix for Bradley Beal that he didn't want to go there. Now, maybe that's changed over the last couple of years. I don't know. But, you know, that has to be watched as well. Philadelphia often gets connected to Beal. You know, he's got a good relationship with Joel Embiid there. Question the Sixers would have to ask is, you know, would we swap Tyrese Maxey for him? And that feels like, I don't know if I'd do that. In fact, I don't think I would do that. And outside of that, you don't really have anything that Washington would really want in Philadelphia. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting, you know, to see where, again, where he wants to go. Because that's what this is all about. Because of that no trade clause, he decides where he wants to go. So, I don't know.
Yeah, this always happens. I mean, I covered, you know, I guess I wasn't on the Knicks beat right up until the very end of Carmelo's tenure, but he was one of the last guys before this to have the no trade. And always end up having guys that stay with their franchise longer because of it. Because it's like, you know, they know that they hold the keys to a deal getting done, essentially. Players, I feel like a lot of times, and I think this is one of the topics we're going to bleed into in a minute, sometimes have more loyalty than they really should to organizations that don't know what they're doing. And they end up sticking around longer than they should. And then guess who ends up losing out because of that? The organization, because they can't really trade someone at the peak of their powers or at the peak of their value is the more important way to put it. So, and even if you could, you don't even get to really scour the whole league because it's only teams that player would be comfortable getting moved to. So it's just a bad situation.
I don't even think it's loyalty, Herring, that these guys have. I just think they know that you get the money now and you deal with what you want out of your career later. I mean, that's why when people are like, will Jaylen Brown sign a Supermax in Boston? Of course he will. Because even if it doesn't work out and he decides in a year he doesn't want to be there anymore, he'll have the money and he'll just talk to Boston and they'll figure out a deal. That's the way it works. And Carmelo was kind of one of the first to kind of pioneer that attitude. Like Carmelo, and Herring, I think you'd agree, like all things being equal, he probably would have been a Bull. Like if he got a 5-year deal for Chicago in that offseason, he would have gone there. But he could have gotten more guaranteed money, and it turned out to work out for him because on the back end of that deal, he wasn't worth a fraction of what he was, you know, making on that last contract. So guys take the money. Like Bradley Beal, it's not a diss towards him, but I don't think Bradley Beal, when he signed that contract, was thinking, I'm a wizard for life. I think he was thinking, I'm going to get $250 million guaranteed and a no-trade clause. So why wouldn't I do something like that? And here we are.
Shout out to Bradley Beal, by the way, because that is one of the best contracts. Shout out to Bradley Beal.
Shout out to Mark Bartlestein, his agent, like for getting that included in the deal, because he's got $250 million guaranteed and a no-trade clause, and now he can quite literally pick which team he wants to go to.
Incredible. Truly incredible.
That rarely happens in the NBA. Yeah. All right. The other hot rumor this week involved New Orleans. The Athletic reporting that the Pelicans are among the teams looking to move up in the draft, which has fueled speculation that Zion Williamson could be available. Zion is 23 or is going to be 23. He's under contract for the next 5 years. Missed about half of last season with that hamstring injury. But before he got hurt, the Pelicans were playing great. So, Rohan, we'll start with you on this one. The Pelicans are among probably a half a dozen or more teams looking to move up into the draft. It's a weird draft year because there are a bunch of teams that want to move up, and at least one of the teams, specifically Portland, may be looking to move out. Should Zion Williamson be on the table in a deal for a top three pick?
Whew, yeah, man, Zion Williamson popping up in a lot of rumors and whatnot lately. What should the Pelicans do? Ah, man. So I think that Zion Williamson should be on the table in trades because the Pelicans have proven over the last couple seasons they have a really good team. When Brandon Ingram, CJ McCollum are healthy, they've played really good basketball. They have great supplementary pieces. Herb Jones, Trey Murphy, Jose Alvarado, Jonas Valanciunas has been really good for them. Like, that team, when all those guys are healthy, I think is going to be a consistent playoff team. They might be back half of the bracket, but last year they were kind of beset with injuries. Zion going out halfway through the year. The year before that, they kind of make the playoff run without Zion. You have something there, and as great as Zion has been, can you trust him? Do you wait on him? Do you wait on him to fulfill his potential while Brandon Ingram and CJ McCollum are already playing great? My issue with the Pelicans, what I don't understand is, you know, it's not an old team, but it's a team that's been through a little bit together now. They have some shared history. If I were going to move Zion, I don't know that I would move him for a pick, even as good as we think Scoot Henderson may be or some of the other prospects in this draft near the top, because to me, it's just kind of kicking the can down the road. They're saying, okay, let's develop another guy and see if he fits in next to who we have. So I could understand trading him. I think if a true superstar were to become available, so maybe someone unexpected. I don't know who that player is that I'm moving Zion for just yet, but I don't understand making the move if I'm New Orleans to get a draft pick when my team has already proven they can be really good and I think competes with anyone when fully healthy. I don't understand why they'd want to kind of go backwards in the timeline here.
Herring, what do you think?
Yeah, that was, I mean, honestly, I don't mean to parrot what Rohan just said. That was what I was a little bit confused by, as normally, I mean, let's put it this way. Before last year, if you had come into this past year saying, if Zion stays healthy and produces the way that we know he can, which is essentially what he was doing last year until he ended up missing the rest of the season, I think even last year, you still would have had a list of, we would only trade Zion for this list of players. And I'm not sure how long the list would have been. It wouldn't have been that long, I don't think, because we've seen his potential. It's not even just potential. We've seen what he does when he's healthy. From really like his second year on, the guy is like a 60-plus percent shooter, basically right up there with Jokic as far as the most efficient guys in the league who are volume shooters when he's able to play. He's got some deficiencies defensively, but we know the biggest question mark about him is his ability to stay healthy. So in light of all that, you're talking normally about, like, there are only 10-ish guys in the league we would maybe trade him for, considering contract, considering age, stuff like that. Like, he's a franchise player for most teams in this league if he's able to play. So to go from that conversation to now, like, we'll trade him for a pick is just weird. I guess I get it, because after a certain amount of time, how many times can you keep saying – we're going to roll the dice on him being healthy, because we've got the rest of the roster ready to compete for, if not a title, then maybe, you know, a conference finalist, something like that. It's just weird to roll the dice on him to then trade for, a pick, even in a draft like this one that's not Wembanyama. You know, you're not going to get there in terms of how high up you get in the draft. So I don't know which guys or which teams you'd really be looking to trade with. Or who you'd be getting back. He makes a lot of money too, by the way. And so there would still need to be some pretty hefty throw-ins from whoever is getting him. But I think it's too big of a question mark. Also, man, like, if you can't get it right with him, and maybe it's his body, and so maybe it's not a knock on the training staff. I'm not trying to knock anyone. But, man, like, he kind of seems like the sort of player, because of the way he produces, it's worth trying to shuffle around some of your staff to try to figure out, can we get some people that are specialists in helping guys that have been injured repeatedly to getting them right physically so that we could just get them to stay on the court? I would probably try that one time before I would just say, let's move off of Zion. I would probably give him one more year, just because the rest of your core is relatively young too. And if you I mean, they were in first place very briefly for maybe like a game or two.
They were looking good
early on in the season. I remember writing about it. They were scary. And that was with Ingram hurt, by the way, for most of that run when they actually ascended into first place. You know, without him, they fell apart. And frankly, Ingram was out for a lot of that time too, even when Zion left the lineup. But that's the makings of something more so than like, let's give this pick time to kind of gel with the rest of our roster and mature. I would rather try to go for it with Zion one more time. I wonder what Willie Green would stand on all this too. Like, I imagine that he knows that it's capable of working if they've got their full complement of guys. I would go for it one more time before I would really have this conversation over a pick. If we're having a conversation over a player.
So I'm a massive Scoot Henderson fan. Like, huge. I think Scoot Henderson is going to be an all-NBA guard within the next 5 years. I think he has that, maybe even earlier, maybe next 3 years. I wouldn't trade Zion Williamson for the rights to draft Scoot Henderson. I certainly wouldn't trade Zion Williamson for the rights to draft Brandon Miller. Look, it's been a weird first few seasons for Zion. The foot problems that flared up early, the hamstring problem that flared up last year, but
last week on Twitter, that's his world.
I'm sorry. That's his world. But to your point, I mean, the Pelicans were 23-14 when Zion went out in early January. They were really good. And we were looking at them saying, wow, when they're healthy with CJ, oh, they could be a threat. Like, they could beat a lot of teams in the Western Conference. I don't think you can just put that aside because he had a terrible hamstring injury and then he had a setback that kept him out for the rest of the season. It's concerning because, you know, these injuries tend to pile up and you start to wonder, can he ever stay healthy? But moving off a 23-year-old who just 2 seasons ago averaged 27 points on 65% true shooting. Like, that's an absurd number, 65% true shooting. I don't know how you do that. I don't know how you justify that. I mean, if you're the Blazers, you'd probably do that.
I would do that in a heartbeat.
Because for the Blazers, I mean, if you're the Blazers, that satisfies kind of both your needs. Mm-hmm. You're both getting a guy that can help you win now, and you're getting a guy that could be the centerpiece of a rebuild if you move off Damian Lillard, which we'll get to in a moment. But if you're the Pelicans, I don't know how that makes any sense because you'd still have C.J. McCollum, who's in his 30s and is in kind of win-now mode. Brandon Ingram looks like he's ready to win now. You'd have a win-now team that's trying to incorporate a, 19, 20-year-old rookie into that mix. And I don't really understand how that makes any sense. I also wouldn't trade Brandon Ingram for the third pick right now. I just think that this team is young enough and talented enough to just be left alone, to just say, we're going to build and we're going to build off of this group. Yeah, of this group altogether. So I would not trade Zion for
Mannix,
almost anything.
I have a question for you. Do you get the sense, I don't know if you've had a chance to like really start talking to people about the offseason and whatnot, but do you get a sense that draft night is going to be a night with a lot of movement, or are teams going to see who is picked where and then maybe after the fact try to make some moves? Like, is Portland basically on the Dame clock like right now, or like how do you kind of see it all playing out?
Well, let's talk about Portland then. Mm-hmm. It's a good transition to the Blazers. I think Charlotte uses its pick. I don't know who they use it on. You know, I've heard the last couple of days that there has been a growing amount of support for Scoot Henderson. There's obviously a concern internally about, you know,
him and LaMelo,
redundancy.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, like, do you, you know, can they play together? I you can't think like that, though. Like, if you've got a talent that you believe to be transformative, you got to take it. It doesn't really matter how the fit works right away. And Scoot Henderson, I mean, look at Scoot Henderson. Like, I encourage people, if you aren't familiar with his game, like, just look at pictures of him. He's built like a middle linebacker. And he's got, you watch him, like, go back to the games in Vegas between the G League team and the Wembanyama team. And Wembanyama was awesome. Like, he was incredible. But Scoot Henderson, in that first game that he played in, was just a cut below.
And,
like,
and did not back down. And did not back down.
No, not one inch. Like, I think he's going to be special. I think the Hornets should draft him. But if he's on the board at number 3, I don't see the Blazers passing on him. I don't. And then that puts them in a Damian Lillard type predicament, because Lillard has made it pretty clear, and you know, publicly saying, you know, if we use that top three pick, yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense for me to be around. I'm paraphrasing a little bit there, but he said, you know, and look, he's been pretty consistent with his messaging about, you know, I'm not going to ask for a trade or demand a trade, but if we get to the later stage of the offseason and we're not in a position where we have a chance to win next year, Joe Cronin and I are going to have a conversation. I think that conversation is coming. I think it's coming because Portland, unless they can get a Zion caliber player of that age and that talent, you just can't, you can't move off that pick for a veteran that might get you like the sixth seed next year. That's not good basketball. That's not how you build a winner. Mm-hmm. And as much as it pains people in Portland, the idea of moving off Damian Lillard, sometimes it's just time. And I think we're there with Portland.
Yeah.
Rohan, I just think that you've got a team that has plateaued. And even if Damian Lillard comes back and plays like he did last year, what are they? 8 seed? 7 seed?
Right.
6 seed? They're just not there right now. And if you can draft Scoot Henderson and then get a haul of assets in exchange for Lillard, I think that's a haul that would be legit. Because Dame, in his early 30s, playing at the level he has, he's just one of those guys where you say, like, that's a winner. Like,
he can take you over the top.
He can push you over the top in ways that maybe Bradley Beal can't. It just doesn't take a rocket scientist to realize that's the best way to go.
Yeah, I kind of agree, and I again, it's people. I know people in Portland, and shout out to Sean Hyken, who are going to be like, "Oh, it's just another national podcast saying the Blazers should trade Dame if he wants to stay. What's the big deal?" But
it is a big deal.
Yeah,
though. Like Sean's great. Sean's great. Mm-hmm. I read the Rose Garden Report. You should all encourage you to subscribe to that. If you keep Damian Lillard and you're just doing that to sell tickets at the Moda Center and you're doing that to maintain relevancy over the next couple of years, mediocrity is not a strategy. It's not. And look, there's no guarantee that you'll be able to rebuild if you trade Lillard. Lots of teams have failed at that task. Mm-hmm. But it's pretty certain that just by keeping him around, you are not giving yourself a chance to win a championship. And that should be the end goal for teams.
I will say they're in the rare position where a lot of teams, when they trade their star, never, quote-unquote, bottomed out. Portland didn't bottom out, but the fact that they're starting with the number three pick and Damian Lillard kind of puts them a step ahead a lot of teams that would be doing this kind of rebuild, right? They have the number three pick in a draft with three fantastic prospects. They're going to end up with a really good pick at the top of the draft, that even if we don't know what that player is going to become. It's going to be a good pick, and then they have the opportunity to go out and trade Dame for either a young piece or a package of picks. It's going to be fascinating because I'm with you. I just don't see the point of using that pick on a player and pairing that player with Dame, especially if it is a Scoot Henderson. Beyond that, if you think of the best player that they could get for the number three pick, whoever that best player is, let's say it's Pascal Siakam, who is – been an all-NBA guy, it would actually be hard to do much better than him. Maybe you guys can think of a name. Like, does Lillard Siakam get you past Jokic Murray? Does it get you
Toronto
past...
would do that. Toronto would do that in a heartbeat. Right. Toronto, you wouldn't even have to get past like the first minute of that phone call.
And like, does it get you past LeBron and AD? You know, and obviously, like, all these teams have more players to them, but even in an era of so much parity in the Western Conference, like let's say they got Zion somehow for the number three pick. Can you defend well enough with Dame and Zion? And can Zion be healthy enough and good enough? He's never been through a playoff run before, that now you have something resembling a contender. To me, the problem is it's not only that there's no perfect player available. It's even if they were able to get a really high impact veteran with that pick, as you mentioned, I just don't know that it really moves the needle for them in a meaningful way in the West with how many good teams there are. Even you talk about Booker and Durant, like in Phoenix, it's just going to be, they're in such a, listen, it's an unfortunate position because I love Lillard. I love the Blazers. I think it's been a great partnership and I think it's been a successful one. Just even if it hasn't resulted in a championship, that doesn't mean it's been unsuccessful, but I'm kind of with you, Chris. I do think it's time. Although once again, anytime I bring it up to people, they're still like, Dame loves it there. I still haven't heard from anyone I know that people are somewhat poking.
Of course he loves it there. Yeah. But I mean, like, I've talked to Dame on the record about this
right.
over the last year, and look, he's been pretty consistent. If we can win, then absolutely, I want to be here for the rest of my career. But if this team is going to go in a different direction and rebuild, it just makes sense to do something with me mm-hmm. that moves me somewhere else. Herring, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's the crux of it, is that we're talking about this as if, like, if there's a way to make them a contender through that third pick, and I don't think there realistically is. Even if you get Zion with the third pick, which I don't think we all kind of agreed we wouldn't do that. So I think we would all be surprised if it happened. There's real potential there for that to be disastrous too, for a franchise that has already had any mm-hmm. number of disastrous outcomes with guys at the top of the draft, or you know, an opportunity to make use of something at the top of the draft, whether it was Sam Bowie, whether it was Greg Oden, even Brandon Roy, who had a fantastic run with them, didn't pan out from the standpoint of his body holding up. It would be really tough if Zion becomes another cautionary tale in that sense, even though we've seen hit again with him, it's not even potential. It's just capability of staying on the court. And you know, they're Portland's not one player away. So I respect the hell out of Dame. Like, he's exactly the sort of star player I want. He's not out talking big or brash. He just goes out and produces wins in really high pressure situations when he's healthy. He can't do that totally on his own. And Zion helps fill certainly some holes for you, certainly gives you another franchise caliber guy, but, you know, has his own questions, and they would still need more than that. And I think that's the challenge, is that nobody really wants to say goodbye here for a lot of the reasons you just mentioned. I think Dame is a guy that, again, we talk about loyalty. He's been as close to that in sports as we've seen, really. He's never really deeply entertained the idea. He's basically said, what I hate about the media right now is that sometimes other people kind of project things onto you from the standpoint of wanting you to want a trade, mm-hmm. even if you don't necessarily want one. Like, I don't think he wants to leave. I think he would love to stay and make it work. But even if you're able to do that by getting a guy that makes you more competitive, there's not a single guy out there on the market right now that puts you in contention right away, unless a lot of other things fall apart for the other contenders in that conference. So I just kind of think maybe it's time, especially from the standpoint of, what do you have? Maybe 2-3 more years, if you're fortunate, of Dame being at anywhere near this level. And then at that point, you would need to be pivoting anyway. And so Zion would be a great answer for that. That buys you more time. But again, you don't know if he would be healthy enough to really sustain anything with Dame and as your franchise face. It could be more of an albatross from the standpoint of, if he's not healthy, then what? So I don't know. I think it's probably just time, really, for all these guys we've been mentioning. I would not put Zion in that category, but I think for Dame and Bradley Beal, I think they're kind of the same situation, except Dame is just a much better player, and we view him as being even more tied to the organization, because I genuinely don't think he wants to leave, but it just still might make more sense.
Look,
for him too.
If Lillard was 27 years old, this isn't even a conversation. You don't pick up the phone if people call for him. But nope. He's going to be 33 this summer. And, you know, he's probably one injury away from becoming extremely difficult to trade, or at the very least, not bringing back the type of package he'd bring back right now. And that's what you got to focus on if you're Portland. Maximizing his value at this stage. And, you know, look, if you can start over with Scoot Henderson or Brandon Miller as your centerpiece, you've got Anfernee Simons there, who is a terrific scoring guard. You've got Shaedon Sharpe there, who was a top 7 pick. Whatever haul you get in exchange for Damian Lillard, there are worse places to start from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are worse places to...
And like Scoot Henderson would be a fantastic place to start. And that did not even include they could get back from Lillard. Yeah.
Yeah, no question. All right, last thing I want to get to is, we are a couple of weeks away from, I think, one of the more fascinating free agencies for one player in particular in a while. James Harden is undoubtedly going to opt out of his contract and become a free agent. Everything logical suggests that James Harden and Philadelphia will find a way to get a long-term deal done. You know, Philadelphia is a contender. James Harden has a elite number, or at least elite co-star. I'm not going to call him the number two because Joel Embiid is the reigning MVP, but he has an elite guy to play alongside. Tyrese Maxey is a young player that's only going to get better. It just seems like the situation for James Harden is perfect. He's got the GM there that loves him and will do anything for him. Yet, we continue to hear about other options for James Harden. We continue to hear about James Harden being interested in a reunion with Houston. And as crazy as that sounds, I know that over the course of the last 6-8 months, there have been a lot of high-level conversations at Houston about bringing James Harden back. There are a lot of people on board with bringing James Harden back. It doesn't make any sense to me because that's a team in the infancy of a rebuild, and James Harden at 34 years old doesn't seem to fit that timeline. But their interest in James Harden is real. Now, if that interest manifests itself in a four-year contract, I don't know. I'm going to guess that the Rockets, I would hope at least, have at least some restraint in what they'd be willing to offer him. But we've also heard James Harden connected to Phoenix. I'm sure in the next couple of weeks we're going to hear James Harden connected to somebody else. Herring, I guess the question is this. Why is it not just a no-brainer for James Harden to figure out a deal with Philadelphia and go back to a team that can pay him and can help him get help him potentially win a championship?
Isn't the answer kind of obvious? I mean, we'll get the answer to this very soon, but if he decides to go to Houston, it's because winning is not the most important thing to him. And I'm normally not that blunt with the way that I'll explain something, but if he's going there at this point in his career, granted, he's been in situations where he had opportunities. It's not to say he's never been most interested in doing that. Houston, they had a golden opportunity to do it, and it just didn't happen. Chris Paul got hurt. They had another good opportunity there while he was in Houston. The Brooklyn situation might have borne that fruit. He decided he didn't want to kind of be – he went there so that he could have like a third of the work, and it ended up being a lot more than that considering the Kyrie shenanigans, KD being hurt. He didn't want to wait around for that situation. He was annoyed by that situation. Okay, a lot of us would have situations at work that make us frustrated. He's entitled to that. That's fine. And he saw someone else that maybe wasn't taking the idea of winning or winning at the highest level as seriously as he was. That's fine. He's entitled to make that decision. If he walks away from the Philly situation to go to Houston specifically, a team that, even though maybe their best player long-term is a big man, that team is run by its guards who kind of do the your turn, my turn thing. We'll see soon enough whether that was a function of their coaching or if that was just, that no one's running the situation and that it's just kind of a free-for-all. If he goes to a situation where you're taking the ball out of their hands to some extent, theoretically taking the ball out of the hands of Şengün to some extent, for a team that doesn't play defense, to be led and run by a guy that his work ethic, from the way that we view it, from the fun he has off the court to the idea of him, the way he exited Houston the last time, is not necessarily a leader all the time, would be so ridiculous to me. And if it's for big money, as you said, and no restraint on Houston's part, we've been talking about it. We haven't danced around. We've been talking about it pretty actively from the standpoint of no trade clause and everything else. And sometimes teams get really desperate from a ticket standpoint. And if they're bringing him back at big money, we would be looking at a situation that looks like that to a T. So if he decides to do it, by all means, he has the right to do it. I don't even need to call him on it. It just is what it is at that point. But like, if you're walking away from a situation where we keep talking about how Philly is this close to making it to a conference finals and has an MVP, whether you view him as having been deserving or not, has an MVP on the roster, has a guy that if Harden doesn't stay, looks very ready to take over the mantle of clearly being the second guy, and has at times. Sometimes it's looked like he's ready to be the lead guy. What are we even talking about at that point? I think if you want to have a conversation about Phoenix, fine. That's fair. Harden has played with KD before. Booker at times looks like an MVP candidate. That's fine. We could have that conversation. But if it's about Houston and he's really weighing that, even if it's a little bit more money, I just don't understand it at that point. Because to me, you can't look me in the face and tell me it's about winning at that standpoint unless you've just decided you don't care anymore. And I think we've all had the question about how heavily these guys value titles. We were just having that conversation about Dame and whether there's more to it than that, whether it's about the process, whether it's about the longevity of staying with one team. You can have that conversation about Dame, but Harden has moved teams enough now to where it's like, if you're doing it to take that big of a step back, whatever happens at that point, you just have to be willing to take it. And maybe money is worth it at that point to just kind of overlook the idea of winning. But you're not going to win there, and everyone knows it. The move then would not be about winning. It would not be about teaching those young guys the habits. So at that point, it seems only about money at that standpoint, or maybe that you like the market because you played there for so long. But I just wouldn't understand.
Honestly,
it at that point.
He should go to Houston. I'm done with the James Harden experience. Let him go to the Rockets. Him, Udoka, whatever guy they decide to throw a ton of money at with all the cap space they have, whether it's Brooke Lopez or someone else, let them put together like some kind of middling playoff team. And guess what? It'll end up being the same James Harden experience we've had for the last few years. Like, just put him in Houston. I'm
you
tired
think
that's
of a playoff team. Like, do you want like I don't, you put James Harden there? That's not a playoff team.
No,
I don't know. But if I'm Philly, I'm going nowhere close to the max for this guy. Nowhere close to the max for this guy. Who's now shown, like, time and time again, we just don't know if his body can handle four playoff rounds in a row. He had some big games in the playoffs this year, but when they needed him most, down the stretch of Game 6, a chance to close out and move to the conference finals, gave him nothing. Game 7, in Boston. We saw a team win a Game 7 in Boston. It can be done. They gave him nothing, okay? Like, if you're the Sixers, my question is, if you're the Sixers, you have Joel Embiid in the middle of his prime. I would truly rather take a small step back than commit myself to James Harden at a number that's going to ruin the next 3 or 4 years of Joel Embiid's career. Like, you have to be really mindful of that, because you're going to get some flexibility eventually when Tobias Harris's deal expires. Maybe you can trade him. You have Maxey. You have a guy in Embiid that theoretically we've seen now, I think, guys want to play with. Jimmy Butler loved him. James Harden seems to genuinely enjoy playing with him. If I'm the Sixers, I'm lowballing the hell out of James Harden. And I'm not someone who likes for players to get underpaid, but to me, you cannot make the mistake of handicapping Embiid's prime. I think these next 3 or 4 years are going to be his best years of his career's chances to win a title. I'm not handicapping myself to James Harden for these next 3 or 4 years at some ridiculous number. And I have to think of all people would know that it's Daryl Morey, but he has this personal relationship with Harden that seems to cloud his judgment at times. I just would not take that risk if I'm the Sixers. That's why I think, frankly, Houston makes sense for him, because I just don't know that he's... The Suns are the only other team that I think makes sense, because he'd be the definitive third option there. And you can trust KD and Book in these big games.
How does that work?
Like, exactly. It's going to be some kind of weird sign and trade. It's going to be some kind of weird sign and trade. I'm with you. I don't know how it works, which is why I think the roads lead to Houston, because they'll give him the money because he'll sell seats. And you're right. Maybe they're not a playoff team, but maybe they can use their space, add another vet, and become at least decent, become respectable. But, like, if I'm a contender, like, literally outside of the Suns, why am I trusting James Harden, especially at what he's going to cost and what he brings with him? I really struggle to see how he's worth it for a team trying to win a title.
I have no idea why Houston would bring him in. It doesn't move the needle, at least not in the way they want it to. And invariably, you're going to be stuck with a contract that is untradeable on the back end with a guy making $50, $60 million in his late 30s. That doesn't make any sense to me. This is not a team.
If we're talking about that money, that's crazy.
But that's what a four-year max, you know, would roughly be. And look, that's what he's looking for. Like, man, he's going to be looking for that dollar figure, man, on a new deal. You are a team that I think made the right decision on a coach. I think Ime Udoka is the right coach for that group because he's going to bring some order to that situation. He's going to be a disciplinarian. He's going to ruffle some feathers, especially in the first few months. There's no doubt about that. But I think he will eventually bring the best out of the young guys that are there. What they should do is allow Ime Udoka to coach these guys up, to coach Jalen Green, who's got all-star potential, to coach Jabari Smith, who's got all-star potential, Alperen Sengun, very good player, starting caliber player, coach him up, and then use that number four pick to draft the best player available and add him to that mix. The absolute worst thing that they could do is to sign James Harden and trade that number four pick for a mid-level veteran. It doesn't make any sense at all in terms of building a franchise. So for Harden, Rohan, I agree with you. Like, if Houston will pay him and he loves it there, mm-hmm, sure, you sacrifice any chance of winning a championship, but you get paid and you get to go back to a situation where that you really enjoyed. And while, you know, Daryl Morey's not there, his top lieutenant's there, Raphael Stone, mm-hmm, and I've been told that Raphael is on the same page as ownership when it comes to bringing James Harden in. I get it if you're James Harden. I just don't get it if you're the Houston Rockets. What I think it's going to come down to for Philly, Herring, is the level of contract, right? Like, if you can get James Harden back on a two-year deal with a partial guarantee for the third, of course you do it. Like, of course you do it. Like, you're trying to mm-hmm maximize Joel Embiid's prime years, as Rohan said, and James Harden, for all his flaws, over the next couple of years still helps with that. But mm-hmm, if it's like 4 years or bust, I'm kind of with Rohan. I don't know that I'd do it. I don't think I'd do it. I mean, I think I'd cross my fingers and hope there's another level that Tyrese Maxey can get to, which I do think there is. And then I'd try to use some of that future flexibility. And maybe you do take a small step back next season, but I'd use that flexibility to try to get a piece that makes more sense over the next 2 or 3 years. Because a 4-year contract for Harden, it's going to bite you in the end. It just is. And maybe that's the price you have to pay to get 2 good years out of him, but it's a stiff price to pay, Herring, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it essentially, as we're talking about Harden and the possibility, or the name at least being floated, or the team being floated, is Phoenix, it becomes the Chris Paul situation over again, where it's like you give him a deal for, on paper, it's a lot of money. It's over a couple of years, and you kind of reevaluate it at that point, because you're at that point, you're kind of shooting into the unknown to some extent, but the likelihood, in all likelihood, you're going to watch someone fade at that age. It's just what happens, particularly when we've already started to see some of that slide or some of that inconsistency from Paul, which we did last year, literally in the middle of a series last year, and saw it this year as far as the health and everything else, and just Chris Paul's numbers were not there as much. We're going to see that from Harden at some point. It's not someone that has always prioritized his body. He's not someone that has always had incredible, incredible burst. If anything, he's actually had incredible deceleration because he wasn't the most athletic guy. He wasn't jumping over people. So when some of that ability and that stop and start ability kind of slows down a little bit, it's just part of what's going to happen. And so if you can lock him in for a couple more years on big money, but money that runs out at a certain point or loses the guarantee at a certain point, like Chris Paul's is doing this coming year, you do it. I wouldn't do it at the numbers that we're talking about for a max still, but if it's for 2 years, you can maybe run with that to some extent, because you're not breaking the bank necessarily in perpetuity when you've got an MVP and an all NBA caliber guard on your roster, aside from James Harden. So sure, you would do that. But look, I mean, I'm not even sure that gets it done. Like, at this point, we've seen that that's not necessarily enough to get it done. You're hoping that you just have enough 1 year to beat Boston. You're hoping that you've got enough to beat a Milwaukee. And you might not do it, but there aren't a whole lot of other answers there on the board right now. Until you're able to remake this roster with the Tobias Harris deal and some other stuff. Until Joel Embiid has a run where he holds up perfectly through the whole run. Rohan said it best. We've yet to see Harden over the last few years really just hold up completely well. And the likelihood of that happening gets smaller as you take longer with this deal and as you let this play out even more. But there aren't a whole lot of great answers there. It's just not a great situation. And I imagine the situation looks even less great when you're hearing and watching the possibility of James Harden completely ignoring your situation to take one that he's going to, what, a 22-win team or whatever it was? Like, okay, I guess. But that's kind of where we're at with this, and it just doesn't smell right to me. If it's just a leverage play, great. But if it's something that he's actually really going to consider, you might be better off without him.
All right, well, the offseason is already interesting. So I'm sure we'll have a lot more to talk about in the next couple of weeks. Keep it locked over at SI.com. We'll have a lot of off-season stories coming up, and we'll be back on this podcast early next week.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.